Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. May is Stroke Awareness Month, although this is something we should be focusing on throughout the year. According to the American Stroke Association, stroke is the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. It's a major cause of serious disability, and close to 800,000 people in the U.S. have a stroke each year. But there is good news. Up to 80% of strokes may be preventable. We are going to find out what it means to have a stroke, along with prevention information that might just save your life. I'm very happy to have my guest with me today, Dr. Avarag Goswami. He is the stroke director and vascular neurologist at Eastern Maine, no Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center. He specializes in ischemic strokes. Am I saying that right? Ischemic.
Yes, it's stroke, ischemic, and hemorrhagic, all kinds of stroke and vascular pathologies.
Excellent. And other cerebral vascular disorders. He completed a neurology residency at Albert Einstein Medical Center in Philadelphia and a vascular neurology fellowship at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. And also Angela Wheeldon. I've known her for years. She's amazing. She's a registered nurse. She has been the stroke and hip and knee replacement program manager for 11 years at Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center. That is such a mouthful. Where she's actually worked for 23 years. And proudly, Eastern Maine Medical Center has been designated as the Joint Commission by the Joint Commission as a primary stroke center since 2009. That is a very big deal. Angela is also stroke nurse certified, runs a stroke support group, and is on the board of the Maine Stroke Alliance. So it is an honor, Angela, to have you back and discuss this. You're both a wealth of information.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Carol, for having us on.
Thank
It's
you.
our
Thank
pleasure to
you.
talk about on this serious subject and topic, which affects so many lives worldwide every year.
It does. And I think the thing that I appreciate the most is that it's possibly preventable. So people could change their lives and maybe never have to deal with this. So I'm going to start with you, Dr. Goswami. What happens in the brain when a person is actually having a stroke?
Sure. Well, the short answer is that during the stroke, the part of the brain is affected that can lead to serious impairment of the function. But in order to better understanding, we need to understand the brain is a complex network of brain cells, and the different part of the brain controls different and specific function, such as but not limited to the language you're speaking and the strength of the body. Sensation, the balance, the vision, and many more. So when stroke hits, it hits pretty abruptly, very acute, suddenly, and the patient may experience symptoms such as the impairment of those functions, as we mentioned, depending on what part of the brain is affected. So what happens is when the stroke hits, that disturbs and disrupts those brain cells network in the part of the brain. So that's exactly.
So a stroke can happen. We think of the brain as one unit, usually, I think. And so a stroke can happen in different parts of the brain, which is why some people may not be able to speak after a stroke. Others may not be able to remember or walk. It can happen anywhere in the brain, is that right? And affect
That's
functions.
correct. Yeah, that's correct. Basically, stroke, we need to understand that stroke is an insult to the blood vessels of the brain. We also call it cerebrovascular accident. So when it happens, there is a kind of there are two kinds of two ways stroke can happen. One is the interruption of the blood supply to the part of the brain, another is the rupture of the blood vessels that ultimately causes damage to the part of the brain. And if not treated timely, then the impairment of the functions could be permanent, irreversible.
What are the different kinds of strokes?
Yeah, so we need to understand, we broadly can categorize a stroke into two main categories. One is ischemic stroke and one is hemorrhagic stroke. When we say ischemic stroke, that means interruption of the blood supply to the part of the brain. And it happens because of there is a clot which blocks the blood vessel and interrupt the blood supply. So blood tissue, brain tissue does not receive the proper amount of oxygen and nutrition and start to die off if that is not reversed timely, the blockage is not reversed timely. And the other type of stroke is the hemorrhagic stroke, which happens when there is a rupture of the blood vessels within the brain and or on the surface of the brain. And that produces the similar way the symptoms because that causes damage to the brain tissue.
What are the signs and symptoms, and are they different for depending on the kind of stroke?
Yeah, so signs and symptoms for either kind of stroke, whether it's ischemic stroke or hemorrhagic stroke, it's just a functional impairment. And we go by acronym, and people should remember those acronym to better identify those symptoms of stroke to take the prompt action. And we go by BEFAST, BEFAST. B stands for balance, E stands for eye, meaning any vision changes. A for arm or leg, like a weakness developed in the arm or in the leg, or numbness developed in the arm or the leg. F is a face. Sorry, I just missed the F before. F is the face. If your F face is droopy or twisted one side or the other, that is alarming symptoms for the stroke. And S is for the slurred speech. If your speech is garbled and you're not making senses, not coming up with the words, that could be a symptoms of stroke. And T is the time, meaning call 911 timely as soon as you see any of those symptoms as we discussed. So, because the time is the key here when you say this management of acute stroke.
So, what about a sudden onset of a severe headache? Would that be a sign of a possible stroke?
That's true. So headache is, it could be a sign of stroke, but headache is just a headache without any neurological impairment. What we talked about is less likely to be the part of stroke if just a headache, isolated headache, no other symptoms. However, if this is an extremely severe headache, like we call it thunderclap headache, that's important to know, the thunderclap word, meaning something just comes up right away and the patient complains of the worst headache of their life. That is very alarming, and you should always take the same step, what you the calling 911 in a timely manner, because it could be bleed.
When you say time is of the essence, so if someone's having these symptoms, and should they call 911 and wait for an ambulance, or should someone try to drive them to the ER?
So I would say the calling the 911 is the best step. Driving yourself, because it's very important to know that the 911, when you call, the EMS arrives at the scene and they are equipped with the paramedics. They are trained to take the initial steps in the management of stroke or bleed. And the management of the any kind of stroke starts from right there. They know where to take the patients, transport the patients for the optimal management. So the best thing to do is calling 911 in a timely manner.
So the paramedics can help you en route. The hospital's
Exactly.
ready for you, so you're not going in cold and waiting in
That's
the
very, very
emergency
true, yeah.
room, because we all know how busy emergency rooms are. So your chances of seeing someone quickly is via ambulance.
Yeah.
Good. All right. We are almost out of time for this segment, so I'm going to take a quick break now because I want to get into who's most at risk and how do you reduce the risk, and I don't want to cut you off. So we will be right back right after this with more on stroke. So stay with us. There is lots more to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, Dr. Goswami, Angela Weldon, talking about strokes. So we left. I teased it that we're going to talk about who is most at risk for stroke. And Angela, I want to touch on something you said during the break, that it's not just elderly, not just older people who have strokes. So we'll get to that as well. But who is most at risk for having a stroke? Dr. Goswami?
Yeah, sure. It's a very good question. So we need to understand, although anyone can have stroke, regardless of the age, gender, ethnicity, but there are certain population groups they are at higher risk than the others, and we need to understand those risk factors which put someone at very high risk of having stroke. So certain risk factors such as the high blood pressure, hypertension, diabetes, high blood sugar condition, high cholesterol level. smoking and drug use and certain heart conditions such as arrhythmia of the heart, we call the atrial fibrillation, and certain blood disorder that causes the tendency for forming clots. So all those, even the sleep apnea, all those are these are the some of the risk factors, a myriad of risk factors. So those are the main risk factors that can put a population on at high risk of having a stroke. So it's extremely important to understand those risk factors and how can we prevent those risk factors to minimize the risk of having a stroke.
So how does someone reduce the risk of getting a stroke? And
Sure.
especially if you're younger. So if someone's 40 and they're smoking, they probably know they shouldn't be smoking. But if you don't even know your risk factors and you're young enough that maybe doctors aren't zoning in on that, what can someone do?
Yeah, so as I said, in order to reduce the risk of having a stroke, we need to prevent some of those, or most of those risk factors. So a lot of risk factors are easily preventable through lifestyle modification. And when I say the lifestyle modification, meaning that healthy living, which includes good diet. When I say the good diet, meaning healthy eating, less the high cholesterol, fried food, greasy food, and low salt intake, not very high salt intake, avoiding those kind of foods, more greens, incorporating in your diet. So Mediterranean diet, as a matter of fact, is considered the best food. And when I say Mediterranean diet, is like a very balanced diet, like the protein, like you can eat the meat and the greens, salad on the side, and avoiding some of the unhealthy lifestyles such as smoking and using the drug use, even the alcohol use in the like everyday alcohol use is also put you at risk of having increase the risk of stroke. So healthy living is regular exercise and regular PCP visits. So those are the things if someone does, they can, first of all, they can prevent those risk factors, but also if they have some inherent risk factors, regular PCP visits can identify those risk factors. And those, once identified with those risk factors, that can be treated and managed through lifestyle modification as well as through the medications with the help of your providers.
Let's talk about salt for a second, because I know how dangerous it can be. I have high blood pressure. How much sodium should someone have? And do you recommend that anyone who's concerned about this start watching labels? Because I will tell you this, they will be horrified if they start looking at labels and the amount of sodium probably in some of their favorite foods or at restaurants. It's pretty much all diets everywhere are just salt laden.
I can speak to this just a
Yeah.
little bit.
Sure.
When I'm in the out in the community and I'm doing stroke awareness, I talk with elderly folks even, or maybe not even elderly, and they say, "Oh, I just went to the store and I bought all of these frozen dinners. I'm all set for the week." Frozen dinners have a lot of sodium, and I would recommend looking at labels for sure. Dr. Goswami can probably speak to the guideline of how much sodium,
Yeah, generally considered like, yeah, you can check the label if you want, but like, if I say the quantity, I don't know if anyone is going to be able to count that much, but by guidelines, not more than 1500 milligram per day is recommended. You need to, you can watch how much sodium you are eating. And of course, the processed food having more sodium, and one should avoid those kind of foods to cut down on the daily sodium intake.
Well, just as an example for people listening, because I've done my own research for myself, just a slice of American cheese that everybody puts on their sandwiches has 350 milligrams of sodium in that one slice of cheese. So you add mustard to that and all the other things. Pretty soon, you're over your limit just in one sandwich, especially if it's processed meat. So, but I understand too that it's very difficult for people when a green pepper can be $3. It's very difficult for people, especially on a limited income, not to buy the processed food. So, what is the solution there? And people also say they never use their salt shaker, but it's really not even about that. It's about what's hiding in the food.
No,
Either one
that's
of you can
true.
take that.
Yeah, and I think it's a complex sometimes situations. Even we run into we buy some stuff from the regular grocery store, and that has a lot of like as you gave the example of the cheesecake or any cake or anything which has the label on the backside. So I think it's important to take a look at it, especially for the sodium. And I would say, as I said, the 1500 milligram per day, less than that is highly recommended. So if you're seeing something is containing more than 1500 milligram, 2000 milligram, so try to avoid those processed food and food having high salt content. But for to simplify this 1500 milligram, I would say the half a teaspoon. That's not more than that. If you have like a more teaspoon, like more salt intake, then try to cut down on it.
Half a teaspoon is not a lot.
It's not a lot.
It's
It's
so
not a
hard.
lot.
Angela, how common is stroke in Maine? What have you seen in your vast career?
Well, I can tell you that at Eastern Maine Medical Center, we see roughly about 500 code strokes per year, and we discharge that amount. And that includes everything. So both types of stroke, but it also includes TIAs, which Dr. Goswami can talk about a little bit too. It's very prevalent in Maine. What we know is that for people that live closer to a stroke center, they tend to do better. They have better outcomes. So as part of the Maine Stroke Alliance, we try to work on making sure that all hospitals have kind of stroke protocols as well, so that when people come to the hospital with stroke symptoms, they know what to do.
Do you think that drinking water helps reduce some of the sodium? I know older people are typically, they're not big
Well,
water drinkers.
yeah, it's a good question. So, salt intake, we should watch for whatever we are eating, including salt. So drinking more water is not the solution for our higher salt intake. It's not going to compensate or anything. I mean, we can think that way that yeah, we are putting like in class, we are adding like 1 teaspoon and we are diluting the salt. But like dilution in the human body does not go that way. But anyways, the thing is that yes, we recommend to stay hydrated, drink, I mean, plenty of water, keep yourself hydrated. That's extremely good for the blood vessels, for the blood, and of course for any organs of the body. So drink, we definitely recommend drinking plenty of water and stay hydrated. But yes, not the solution to compensate for higher salt intake.
Well, that's unfortunate. I thought I found a workaround. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk more about a stroke and why it's important if you are having a stroke or have had a stroke to talk to other people about it. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, talking about strokes. We've discussed things you can do to help prevent a stroke. Watch out for salt. But how about treatment? Dr. Goswami, talk to me
Sure.
about treatment if someone's having or had a stroke.
Yeah, it's really important, especially we need to understand that stroke once hits, it is treatable. It's treatable now, and if we take the timely measures or steps. So I'm going to be emphasizing and talking about ischemic stroke, which accounts for 87% of all the strokes, and 13% is hemorrhagic stroke. So let's talk about the ischemic stroke. And as I mentioned earlier, ischemic stroke is when you have a blockage in your blood vessels, which interrupts the blood supply. So we need to understand that if we take the timely measures, then we can restore the blood flow to the part of the brain which is suffering from the blockage. So we're trying to open the blockage in a timely manner before the tissue dies, permanently dies. So we have the options. One is the medication, and one is the mechanically go up to advance the catheter, the wire, all the way to the site where the blockage is and plug it out. So when we say the medication therapy is, we call the clot busting medication. It is a thrombolytics, lytic therapy, which is tenecteplase or eltiplase. And both are FDA, tenecteplase has recently got FDA approved. So the patient presents timely manner to the hospital, meaning when I say timely, within 4.5 hours of window of the symptom onset, then they may qualify for this medication, clot busting medication, depending on we review other information as well, which accounts for patient qualify or not. So patient could be qualified for clot-busting medication, and we give that medication to block, to open the blockage and to try to restore the blood flow to the part of the brain. And the another therapy which I was mentioning was mechanical thrombectomy, where mechanically we advance the catheter either through the groin or through the wrist all the way up to the site where the blockage is and try to plug it out mechanically to restore the blood flow. So they are the two mainstays of the therapy for the acute ischemic stroke.
Again, time is of the essence. Angela, when someone's had a stroke, I know I really want to get in about your support group, but how important is that that people talk to each other, and what are the emotional ramifications of having a stroke?
Sure. So, talking with other people that have had a stroke, we call them stroke survivors. I run a stroke support group every month, and it's the second Thursday of every month from 4 to 5 p.m. I offer it virtually, and I offer it in person here at Eastern Maine Medical Center. Feel free to give me a call, 207-973-8278, if you have any questions. 207-973-8278. I'm happy to talk this through. A stroke can be very devastating, even if the patient has mild symptoms. When they get home, they may feel like, I can't write a check. I don't know how to communicate with my spouse. These support groups are really important, not only to really talk to others that have had this, that can relate. These talks are very inspiring. They lift each other up. We laugh and we cry and we do all the things that are human. And we get out in the community as well to try to reach out to make sure that everyone knows the signs and symptoms. Because one of the things we find is that patients don't come to the hospital quick enough. They come too late for therapy or treatment. And we really want to make sure that we inspire our stroke survivors to get the word out too, that they feel like that's the least that they could do so this doesn't happen to another person.
I've heard that sometimes people will have these symptoms and they go take a nap trying to sleep it off, which is probably the worst thing they could do.
This is considered a medical emergency. And when you call EMS, like Dr. Goswami mentioned, they know what to do. They actually call us in advance and they say, hey, I've got this patient with stroke symptoms. They're right.
I appreciate this information so much. The number to call is 207. 973-8278.
Correct.
Quickly, Dr. Goswami, if you knew a patient was only going to do a couple of things because they can't change their whole life, I mean, it's very hard. What would you recommend? Maybe two or three things they could do that would really help.
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I would say the first is the healthy living. And number two, regular PCP visits. And healthy living, as I mentioned earlier, is eating good and workout, exercise. Even if you do everyday walking, healthy living and regular PCP visits. Because if you visit your primary care provider, they're going to know that if you have any risk factors for a stroke and could be taken care of.
And I would just add, know your numbers, right? So know what your blood pressure is. Hypertension is the number one risk factor. So know what your blood pressure is. We have folks walking around that don't know what their blood pressure is. And just support what Dr. Goswami says is you do that by going to your regular office visits through your primary. Real specific guidelines for blood pressure, and we can help folks with that pretty easily.
Thank you so much, Dr. Avarog Goswami, Angela Wilden.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on and discussing this. Great
Thank you.
information.
Thank you. You're
Thank
doing a
you.
phenomenal job.
Oh,
Thank you. It's
thank you.
going to make a truly big difference.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. I really appreciate it. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thanks for listening.